Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to the Toe Meets Leather podcast. I'm Logan, and with me today, we've got a full crew. Out in Texas, he's a full-time Texas A&M fan and a part-time alcoholic. We have Artem. How you doing, Artem?
Hey, how's it going?
Over down in Peachtree City, or near those parts, we've got the film boy runner who, in our hearts, Tommy. How's it going, Tommy?
What's up, Logan?
And up in North Carolina, we've got one of Paul Johnson's biggest fans and one of the most upset people on Monday night. Andrew, how's it going, Andrew?
I'm still here, and Parker Braun still missed a block.
Sad notes. Well, on that subject, let's just go ahead and kick it off. Three-fourths of the people here today are Georgia Tech fans, so we all caught that game. Personally, as a football fan, I really enjoyed that week one game. It was probably, certainly in my opinion, I know, Tommy, you differ, it was probably one of the best week one game despite the loss. It was a very impressive fight. We ended up putting up, I believe, 550 yards on a Tennessee defense that had all summer to prepare for us. But at the end of the day, missed block, fumbles, missed field goals, they stack up. Tommy, I know you weren't as positive about the game as I was. What were your thoughts on the matchup?
Basically, what I saw is two defenses that came in with really solid game plans and executed really well in the first half. And then adjustments made by both offenses in the second half, and neither defense made any sort of changes to that. So, I mean, it was basically both offensive coaching staffs proved they were the better in-game adjustments, and both defensive coaching staffs proved they had the better pre-game planning aspect of it. I mean, it was pretty straightforward. It was nobody scores, then everybody scores nonstop all the way up until the end.
Yeah, I was wondering if that had more to do with the injuries or just the fact that at a certain point they just kind of gave up trying. It seemed like they had a good hold on our offense maybe the first two drives and then just lost all control when we started running it up the middle on them. Andrew, you've worked with Paul Johnson before. You know more about this offense. What were your thoughts actually watching the game?
You know, we ran for 535 yards on 86 carries. This is by far the most offensive plays I think we've ever run under Johnson. You know, we controlled the ball for 41 minutes of the game, which is really what we want to do. You know, it was really fascinating to see. We didn't run a lot of triple. We ran a lot of counter option, a lot of speed option, a lot of trap. You know, we had a lot of success too with a quarterback counter, pulling the backside guard and tackle. So, you know, it was really kind of a simplified offensive scheme for the redshirt junior, Taquan Marshall. You know, and he obviously responded by breaking, you know, Georgia Tech records, most rushing touchdowns in a game, most rushing yards for a quarterback, most carries in a game. You know, and the offense to me was really impressive. You know, obviously the two fumbles kill you, but those fumbles were really great plays by Tennessee defenders. You know, it wasn't a bad pitch. It wasn't a bad read. It was Tennessee defenders not giving up and hawking the ball. You know, so it sucks and you hate it, but you lost on great plays by the defense. You know, same thing with the two-point conversion. We had the block, and the guard missed it, slash the linebacker made a great play with his hands.
Yeah, I'm still pissed that they missed. They just called it dead instead of letting him lateral, but I guess they thought it was a forward lateral, so they just called it incomplete. I guess it's fair. It's a rough way to go out on your game one, but at the end of the day, it's not a conference game. It's a really close game against an SEC opponent. I think losing in a close manner in the first week is a good way to get your team driven and motivated. I hope that drives them. I hope we do better. I certainly saw a lot out of Taquan Marshall, and that was probably the saddest part for me. It wasn't that we lost the game. It's that Taquan Marshall had to walk off the field after that stellar performance, and he just goes away with nothing for his troubles. Oh, man, I feel bad for that kid, but he put his heart and soul into it. Well, Artem, I'm going to turn it over to you on a less stellar subject. And I'm not really interested in your thoughts on the Georgia Tech game, but there is another game that happened this weekend that I think is a little closer to your home. So take your time. Take it easy. This is a place of healing. But tell us about how your team blew that 31-point lead in the third quarter.
Three things I'd say that could have completely changed the game. Even if we got our starting quarterback hurt in the second half, so he came out and our true freshman came in who didn't get as many snaps and isn't as polished of a pocket passer and attempted 17 throws, only making three of them. That's, I'd say, one. If he made, you know, a couple more throws there, that would have been a little more clutch. Maybe receivers would have caught a couple more balls instead of dropping them. Then we had a defender literally have an interception go through his hands into the hands of a wide receiver for a touchdown. I'd say that could have completely changed the game. And then you had another touchdown where two of our defensive players ran into each other because they're not used to playing together. So the defensive player beat him. It was a little bit frustrating to watch because they made Josh Rosen really look better than the guy really is. Because I don't think he did anything spectacular to win that game as opposed to us just kind of handing it to them. But from a perspective of kind of why it happened, it's a very young team and they weren't coached up to a level that they should have been coached up and prepared to level that they should have been. They definitely utilized their tight end a little bit more when they found out that we have nobody to cover him. So I'd say our safety and starting quarterback getting hurt kind of did the most of the damage, and then everything else just kind of piled on. But we got another game coming up, just like everybody else, week two, and it is against a weak opponent. And although it is against a weak opponent, it'll be interesting to see, since the starting quarterback's out for the season, how this true freshman does and how many times they have him throw it. And, you know, I'm sure he's getting first team reps this week, so we'll see how accurate he is going forward.
All right. Well, I do like that you're putting the pieces back together. I do want to ask you one more question. I think something that's on pretty much the whole country's mind at this point after that weekend, what do you feel that the future for someone is at your program?
Looking at it from a non-fan perspective and from perspective of what his gold standard is, what he knows his gold standard is, and what he thinks he should do, and that's win. I would say ideal situation for A&M is to fire someone now and spend a month or so looking for a new head coach and have that head coach develop a relationship with the recruits. I think that'll produce the best results going forward. I think we've seen what we can of Sumlin. I don't know if it's going to get better from here. He could have a great season, honestly. We could all of a sudden turn it around and go well, but I would have no confidence in the season afterwards being better. Whereas I think if a new coach came in with the early dead signing period as well, he'd be able to finally make that relationship with the recruits stronger. And then we, you know, have a lot of hope going into next season, seeing what the program is like. And you wouldn't know what's going to happen, right? Right now, Sumlin comes up to next season. They're like, all right, guys, how about we not go 8-5? So I think by his own standard, he knows he hasn't lived up to what we're paying him and what we expect out of him. I would have fired him when he got home, sat down with him, been like, hey, you haven't met expectations, man. Time to go.
I mean, I would have just pulled a USC and fired him before he got back on the plane. But yeah, I feel your pain on that one, man. As that's a rough situation to be when clearly the border regions feels very similar. We'll see how that plays out. Anyway, we've got a few other games to talk about. Tommy, I'm going to hand it over to you. You've got a few Pac-12 games you want to summarize for us on the back end. Why don't you kind of list them off?
Yeah, so the first one, we'll kind of talk about one of the earlier games. Washington and Rutgers. Rutgers, I've got to say, came out to play in the beginning. Washington did look a little bit flat-footed, a little soft in the beginning, but a lot of that, I think, came from Rutgers came out wanting to play. Their defense especially came out, had a lot of pressure on Jake Browning, definitely threw off his rhythm earlier. Actually, over the course of the whole game, Jake Browning was only 17 of 30, for 284 yards passing, which for a guy of his stature is pretty mediocre. And, you know, his QBR was actually in the 50s, which is not good for a team that's, you know, trying to make a case for them going to the playoff this year. They're definitely going to have to improve there. But I think Rutgers is definitely going to come out and surprise some people this year. Their offense really still wasn't great all game. You know, they got the early touchdown to take the lead, but then they didn't score until very late in the fourth quarter after that. So they've definitely got some questions on offense they're going to have to handle. But that defense is definitely going to surprise some people in the Big Ten. The other call out there is that Miles Gaskin on Washington actually had 5 receptions for 79 yards and 7 carries for 59 yards. If Washington's going to make a run, they're definitely going to have to get him involved a lot more. 12 touches in a game is not what you want your top skill player to really have in a game like that. The other game I wanted to talk about was the other end of the Pac-12, talking about USC versus Western Michigan. Another, you know, supposedly dominant team kind of falling flat, honestly. Sam Darnold was 23 for 33 for 289 yards and threw 2 picks. He also had a fumble that he was able to recover, but just looked very flat overall. And if it wasn't for the fact that their rushing game was very strong, there was a real chance they could have lost that game. Their top 3 running backs actually combined for 27 carries for almost 230 yards, and they were averaging over 8 yards a carry amongst all 3 of them. So definitely got a strong running game there, but their passing game's going to have to step up a lot. On the other end, Western Michigan came out and said that, hey, we don't need PJ Fleck. We're still a force to be reckoned with. Definitely a road loss they should not be disappointed in. They were in the game all the way up until the fourth quarter. If you actually look at it, USC didn't actually take the lead for the rest of the game until pretty much the end of the third quarter. Overall, I mean, Western Michigan was pretty much with them step for step all the way until the end. There was a pick six kind of late in the game that kind of put a nail in the coffin of Western Michigan's hopes. But definitely an entertaining game. I wasn't able to watch it live, but I did go back and watch a lot of it. And it'll be interesting to see how both these teams kind of either build off the successes and the good points in Western Michigan's case, or the disappointing factor of the USC as, you know, preseason number 4 and the supposed Pac-12 South champions. We'll see how they adversity moving forward.
Well, it's also going to be a little awkward when you struggle with what would be considered middling competition, and you're going in against Stanford now, who's had a week to rest and just beat up on Rice out in Australia. So that's not a fun thing to look forward to. Gonna have to see how that plays out. Artem, what games are you gonna recap from last week?
You got Boston College versus the Northern Illinois Huskies. That was a very interesting game because the Huskies couldn't really throw the ball well. 15 of 38, the quarterback Graham. But when he did, he threw it for touchdowns and long gains. So he is still 190 yards on those 15 completed passes of 38 and 1 for 2 touchdowns. Boston College seemed pretty dominant at first, but every time they jump up to a lead, NIU seemed to catch back up to where pretty close there with 2:13 left. Boston College actually kicked a field goal to end the game after Northern Illinois had missed the field goal. It was very interesting because they seemed to run the ball really well on Boston College, and they converted several fourth down attempts as well to get there. Whether it's just being clutch or not, if you look at the recruits that Boston College gets, obviously they're not Alabama or Big Ten, you know, giants like Michigan level recruits. They still get, you know, middle of the pack, I think 50s, 60s of their recruiting classes. If you look at NIU, their highest recruiting class is 89 in the last 6 or 7 years. So interested to see where both of these schools go from here, because I think Boston College kind of edged out a win last minute. They can definitely build on a lot of this, but they definitely need to shore up their run game or run defense, whereas Northern Illinois seems to be pretty good. They won't play as many tough schools as Boston College for the rest of the season, so going from here, they face Nebraska, which they'll probably lose to. But the rest of these are, you know, Kent, San Diego University, Toledo. I think they have a strong chance of beating and ending up probably 10-2 at the end of the season. It'll be interesting watching them. The other game was Michigan versus Florida, which is very interesting. I saw one of the statistics out this weekend that was very actually funny. They ended up on the list of number of games that they should have won, but they lost because they couldn't produce enough offense. And it, I think it's 22 games in a row that they produce under 150 yards of offense. Other schools on the list were schools like Wake Forest because they don't produce enough talent, and Florida kind of was number two on the list for a school that's consistently top 10 recruiting classes. It was baffling to see that I think they had under 50 rushing yards the entire game, and they were barely able to throw. They did have 10 players suspended, but it was kind of sad watching the game because Michigan just straight up dominated them, and Michigan did not let off the gas pedal, which was actually very fun to see. It was good to see Harbaugh with backups in, bringing heat on defense, getting a sack fumble for a touchdown in the end zone, getting a couple of their sacks, and I think they had three quarterbacks in by the time the whole thing was done. So Michigan looks real good. I think they have some things to iron out as well, but they kind of got it going in the second half and pretty much dominated the entire game. 17 of the points that Gators put up on them were from pick sixes from mistakes made in the first half, which happened. So considering that, Florida's had a total of 3 offensive points produced by their offense. Not sure where they'll go from here. They did replace their main quarterback, Felipe Franks, who started, who looked pretty good, because they wanted him to have high esteem going into the rest of the season and didn't want to put the game in his shoulders, which is kind of a weird thing to do, because I think he was their best chance for winning the whole game for him. But we'll see where he goes from here, where his development is. I think he's kind of their best QB going forward, and I think they'll try to develop him.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, I mean, Florida really struggled on, in my opinion, everything. When they didn't get turnovers, they didn't really produce anything. But we'll have to see how that plays out in the future. As far as Michigan goes, we kind of saw a lot of what we expected. It's a young team, but there's a lot of talent there, and they came out and proved themselves. We'll have to see how that all plays out in the future. All right, Andrew, you're pulling your hair out over there. What's going through your mind?
So the first game that I really want to talk about is the one that we kicked off the season with this week on Thursday, was the Ohio State and Indiana. That game, if you go back and watch it, is an absolute masterclass of the Ohio State defense having a plan, coming in with a plan, that plan absolutely collapsing and failing miserably, and the defensive coordinator having the wherewithal and the understanding to make the adjustments needed to help them win the game. They came in wanting to play a lot of man coverage against Indiana, and Legault picked him apart with some great back shoulder throws. You know, Simi Coates really had a great half, and you started seeing it right at the end of the first half where they'd show man but really be playing two or four, you know, moving the safeties around, showing a lot, playing something different. And that really came to a lot of fruition in the second half where they shut down Indiana quite well. You know, JT Barrett kind of got going a little bit more. You know, he did throw for 304 yards and was 20 of 35 for three touchdowns, and he didn't turn the ball over, which is going to help. But honestly, the Ohio State offensive guy that impressed me was that freshman running back, J.K. Dobbins. 29 carries for 181 yards and 6.2 yards a carry. I mean, he looked all that and then some, and you really saw why he was so highly rated coming out of high school last year. And then Indiana really impressed me. You know, the defense played really well in the first half, and I think they just kind of got tired. And, you know, I mean, Ohio State's a good team. There's a lot of talents. The other guy, too, was Simi Coates, the wide receiver. You know, 11 catches, 149 yards, and one touchdown. Yeah, I think Indiana's a team that has somewhat began to play a little defense. You know, will they challenge the big boys? Probably not. But do they have a chance to, you know, win 8-9 games and really have a successful season, especially for a program like Indiana that really doesn't have a lot of football success?
And then next up on your mind, I think, was the big game of the weekend. FSU, I don't want to say at Alabama because it was technically a neutral site, but I think we all know what the city of Atlanta basically is for the University of Alabama. It's a home game.
Yeah, I mean, this really was a defensive game. Yeah, I think both teams really showed extremely well on defense and didn't really show us a lot on offense. Alabama got the ball running, 4.1 yards a carry, which is good. Damian Harris averaged 8.1, which is going to be helpful. But, you know, Jalen Hurts was 10 of 18. They didn't really ask him to do too much, which is helpful. You know, and you got a feel for Florida State. Francois looked really good starting. You know, he kind of tanked a little bit later, but, I mean, the Alabama defense is well-renowned for being very good at what they do. And, you know, he threw the two interceptions. But, and, you know, you hate to see a kid get hurt. I think that's probably the worst part of this game is, you know, a kid who's going into this year, has got a lot of hype, going to be on a good team, and he gets hurt. You know, you hate that for the kid. You hate that for the program. You know, but I think Florida State's going to be all right. I think that defense is good enough to really carry them against probably everyone that's not Clemson. You know, I think that the teams they run into in the ACC, that defense is going to be able to keep them in games. And they've got especially Cam Akers and some of that, the weapons they've got on offense that can help the new true freshman quarterback that's going to be starting for him take some steps in the right direction. Plus, they're not going to play a defense that's as good as Alabama's again this year. You know, the closest they're going to get is Clemson, which we really don't know much about that Clemson defense yet, other that Brent Venables is really good at reloading, and they don't seem to miss a step, much like Alabama does every year.
Now, that said,
I do think that this will jump Clemson into being the favorite for the Atlantic Division, which I think Florida State was going into this week.
Yeah, well, especially that'll happen when you lose your quarterback. But that does bring in a big shift in our topic into what we were going to talk about next, conference perceptions. So this was the big game, I think, that was defining, because everybody was talking about, oh, ACC versus SEC, oh, ACC versus SEC. It's the big deal. I mean, there's the Pac-12 as well and the Big Ten, some other teams I don't really remember. This was kind of the big matchup that was going to define how we were looking at the season from there on. And, I mean, obviously Florida State got handled pretty well. There were some other games where that we're going to talk about a little later where NC State struggled. How does this change your perception going forward? I think a lot of people coming out of last season thought the ACC was on top. Is the SEC back on top, or is it maybe a little too soon to kind of make that call, Andrew?
You know, I still think that Florida State acquitted themselves well against Alabama, who, yeah, they're in the ACC, but to me, Alabama's almost on a level above everyone else by themselves that it's tough to, yeah, you include them in the SEC, but you do get a little tired of all these other SEC programs riding their coattails. You know, I think especially how bad Florida was really the big thing that surprised me, as well as Tennessee not being able to play defense. They did win the game, which obviously is what really matters, who scores more than the other team. Thanks, John Madden. But, you know, Tennessee really didn't look good. You know, South Carolina really won off of NC State mistakes. You know, Florida again looked terrible. Georgia beat App State, which is expected. Kentucky struggled. Vandy won. You know, Ole Miss won. You know, we've talked about A&M. Mississippi State won big. Arkansas won. You know, you kind of have everyone that was supposed to win won. They didn't really have any rough losses. The ACC, you know, the Florida State, I think they acquitted themselves. Clemson won. Louisville struggled with Purdue. So I think the ACC is kind of taking a step back, especially at that second tier below Clemson and Florida State. You know, Virginia Tech played a good game, and I think Josh Jackson's going to be a good quarterback for them. But, you know, where the ACC needed to step up, you know, Georgia Tech, NC State, they didn't. You know, so that all of a lot of that goodwill that was won last year has kind of fallen off that next tier ACC teams. You know, the top's the top, but you really got to start building that depth if you want to compete with the SEC, because at times that's what the SEC's had. You've had Alabama, and then you've had, you know, fantastic teams at LSU and Mississippi State and Ole Miss, and for years Florida, Tennessee, you know, the good years of Georgia. You know, but I don't think the SEC is as great or as fantastic as a lot of people want to think. Again, I think it's Alabama, and then everyone else has got to kind of prove that they belong with Alabama, and no one did that for me.
Fair enough. Artem, you're a little less biased directly towards the ACC. Did anything that happened in the first week shift your opinions of conferences or kind of give you a standout impression?
I think everybody in the Power Four looked very similar, either to what we're expecting, kind of like Andrew talked about Ohio State coming in. You know, I feel like most of last season Ohio State sucked in the half of some game, and because they were really good in the next half or the half before that, they kind of pulled it out. So there wasn't much of an expectation there that was overachieved. I don't think anybody came out and kind of said, we're a different team this year than we were last year. I think everybody's at around the same level that they were last year, or the expectations that they had haven't been overachieved yet or overhyped. As opposed to last year when we finished week one, you had a couple schools standing out to where everybody's like, oh my God, this school's back. You know, they're going to be in the Final Four. They're going to be in the championship, things like that. I don't think anybody's at that level yet. Maybe after this week, we have a couple pretty heavy matchups. I think we'll have a little bit more over-exaggeration of how good some teams are. But I think everybody's on the same relative level. I know there was some sway. Like, I think the SEC won a lot more games than other teams did, but they also didn't play as tough opponents or in as tough matchups. Also, I think we're going to have to redefine what winning week one can mean, right? Alabama lost two of its starting linebackers out for the year. Florida State lost its quarterback. So technically, Alabama won, but losing two starting linebackers might not be a very good thing. Sure, next man up, but technically they just lost the next bunch, right? So it'll be backups playing for them too.
You know, and that's a fair that's a fair point as well. There were a lot of big-time injuries early on in week one. I think, you know, like you talked about, the linebackers for Alabama. FSU lost their quarterback. Georgia lost their quarterback. There's quite a lot of injuries going on. Tommy, in general, I just want your thoughts. What stood out to you week one? Did anything change your perceptions? Is there any team that's standing out to you now that didn't before?
Can I just say that five straight days of college football to open the season is amazing. And the matchups we got to watch pretty much all week long were great. I mean, Saturday was nonstop. Thursday we had a couple good games. Friday was probably the most lackluster of the days. But, you know, still kind of a good warm-up into Saturday. Then Sunday and Monday we got to watch good games. So, I mean, pretty much for the past 5 days, we've had awesome college football to watch. I think week one is starting to mean less and less every year. I think you hear it in the media. I think you start seeing it with how the committee is looking at things, and, you know, a win doesn't mean everything anymore, which my personal opinion is ridiculous. You know, you play the game to win, not to get style points or whatever. But I think with the de-emphasis of the early season wins and its impact on, you know, your end of the year performance, I think teams are going to start reaching out to those other big matchups. You're going to see more of what we got to see first week with, you know, NC State and South Carolina reaching out, and Cal and UNC, and A&M and UCLA, and LSU and BYU. I mean, programs that, you know, they're scheduling these games 3, 4, 5 years in advance. So when you look at where these teams were 3, 4, 5 years ago and what they're scheduling, they're not, you know, scheduling pushovers anymore early. And with what we're going to talk about next week, week two is starting to become better too. So I think overall the college football landscape is going in the right direction, even if it is for the wrong reasons. But it's definitely exciting to be able to watch football like this and no longer have necessarily those weeks where it's like, well, there's no good games to watch. Why am I watching, you know, the Little Sisters of the Poor become punching bags, you know, over 10 games?
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I am glad to see that there's not as many, I guess, preseason games as a lot of people would think of them, where you're playing the Little Sisters of the Poor for week one. All right, into our new segment. We've got one called You're Making Us Look Bad, where we pick out some of the negatives that we saw. And, oh, boy, there were a lot of them. Artem, do you want to start us off?
Sure. I was looking at I just found something while you were talking. If you ever have a chance, go look up Tennessee State football and look up what their logo looks like. And if it doesn't remind you of the colors or the logo of another school, then you don't watch college football. But Mexico State Aggies versus Arizona State Sun Devils is my portion of the Making Us Look Bad segment. Why? Well, because this is probably the second or third season in a row that Arizona State seems to open against a very low-level opponent and has a really hard time with them. Last year it was the UTSA. This year it's New Mexico State. They barely pulled it out in the fourth quarter, 37-31, after giving up 18 points in just the fourth quarter. And we're talking like 50-yard run, 23-yard pass, 29-yard pass, and just it's ridiculous. New Mexico State just couldn't score fast enough. If there was two more minutes left in the game, they probably would have scored again. You know, and the weird part is they didn't do that bad. Their quarterback was doing everything he could. He was 22 of 27 for 300 yards, 2 touchdowns. Their running back had above 4 yards a carry every single time, and they had a wide receiver go for 123 yards. But for some reason, they just don't have a defense again for the third year in a row. And it's just going to be a fun season watching them. I hope they play
Texas Tech.
Texas Tech again, because that would be an amazing game to watch. They do play Texas Tech. I'm so excited. September 16th. Mark your calendars, everybody.
I'm pretty sure they have a bye week that week. I think you're confused.
Oh, you're right. It's a bye week.
Oh, wait. Yeah, my bad. That's a bye week. Tommy, on that note, I think you've got a little more of a defensive-oriented stat to call out.
Yeah, so when we look at BYU, LSU, anybody who's watched ESPN since that game, you've probably heard the stat that the BYU Cougar offense did not run a single offensive play on LSU's side of the field. That means that 50 yards of the 100-yard field, BYU's offense was never present on, which is ridiculous. Tanner Mangum went 12 of 24 for 102 yards with no touchdowns and interception for a grand total QBR of 14. I didn't know QBRs went down to you know, that low, but apparently they do. The other interesting call out from this game, in case you didn't watch it, there was a point in the third quarter where LSU drove all the way down to the 1 yard line and BYU stopped them on a fourth and goal from the 1 yard line, turnover on downs. BYU then proceeds to run the ball for known gain, throw an incomplete pass, complete a pass for 9 yards, and then run for no gain and turn the ball over at the BYU 12-yard line on downs. So on fourth and one, 12 yards from their own end zone, they decide, hey, we're going to go for it, gave it to LSU, and LSU just had to turn that into 7 points because, of course, they're going to do that. But yeah, BYU, you're making just everybody look bad. That was just bad.
So I didn't actually have one, but I am curious now because you brought up the QBR stats, and I'm looking at two different people who had one attempt, zero completions, 0 yards, zero touchdowns, zero interceptions, duh. One of our guys, Jordan, who stepped in for Marshall when he was injured, has a 0.9 QBR rating. And another player that I'm looking at for a team who wears orange, I don't really recognize the logo. T-E-X, I don't recognize it. But yeah, 0 for 1. He's got a 3.3 QBR. How do you determine this crap? That makes no sense. Anyway, Andrew, I think.
Are you looking on ESPN?
Oh yeah.
Just there's a better stat. There's a couple stronger schools. Malik Zaire, Florida, 10.9. Brandon Harris, North Carolina, 7.8.
Yeah, it makes no sense. Anyway, Andrew, I think you've got quite a large call out to handle.
You know, it's funny, Artem, that you had mentioned Brandon Harris. Because my call out is to the public schools for the state of North Carolina. You know, NC State, we'll get to you in a second. But UNC goes into a game against a Cal team that's not supposed to be very good. You know, proceeds to turn the ball over 3 times, play musical quarterbacks, which if we've learned anything, is a terrible thing to do, even more so. And I noticed this during the game when Brandon Harris is right-handed and Chas Surratt is left-handed. Like, Larry Fedora, come on, homie. I respect you a lot, but that's crazy. Now, I do think they're probably going to settle on Surratt because he, you know, his QBR was 54.6 as opposed to Artem telling us that Brandon Harris's was, what, that 7.8? You know, and North Carolina, for all things considered, you know, they shouldn't have lost this game to Cal. And I think the offense is going to get better. Michael Carter, the true freshman running back, really put together a good game. They just, you know, the same kind of issue that North Carolina have always had. They can't play defense. And now it's to you, NC State, where you outgained South Carolina 504 to 246. NC State, what the hell? You know, you gave up a touchdown on the opening kickoff that, if you look at it, turned out to be the difference. Because this vaunted, fantastic NC State defense that we've been listening to all year, oh, they're great. Oh, they got one of the top defensive lines in the nation. They're in the top 10 defense, blah, 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 blah. And you give up 28 points on 246 yards. You allow South Carolina to convert 5 out of 12 third downs. You only force one turnover. Now, you did stop the run. I will give you credit for that. South Carolina only had 1.5 yards per carry and had more attempts than they had rushing yards. But none of it matters because you lost the game. Come on, guys. You were supposed to be the third place team in the Atlantic, NC State, but no. Yet again, NC State shit wins the day.
Everybody forgets about NC State until they get forced to forget about NC State. I don't know, man. We'll see what happens.
As the fantastic SB Nation article says, do you remember NC State? No one remembers NC State. In fact, they're under your house eating the boards, and they've sold your social security number to the Russians. That's how much you forget about NC State.
Oh, I didn't see them selling much to the Russians in that South Carolina game. Well, moving on. We got one last quick segment. We're running a bit long, but we're going to touch on our new Fish-Smithson report. So Fish-Smithson is in the NFL. We will touch on him if he ever manages to play a real down. Right now he's on the practice squad for the Washington Redskins. God bless his soul. But in his honor, we will continue to work for players with strange names who are putting up great stats for their teams. So I've got a few that I'm going to go ahead and lead off with before I let Andrew and Artem fill in. And I think Tommy is going to take a step back for this one. So I've actually got Divine Diablo, who actually did pretty well in the game against West Virginia. He only ended up with 6 total tackles, and they were all solo tackles. And he did get a pass defended as a defensive lineman. He did pretty good for himself. We'll see how he develops in the future. Sorry, defensive backs. Ugh. Anyway, he did pretty good for himself. And I actually lost the stats on my second guy. Andrew, do you want to take over?
Yeah, the guy that I want to talk about is a guy who's really really having a great year this year and really kind of leading the Hawaii Rainbow Warrior turnaround with Nick Rolovich, and that is Diasemi St. Juste, the senior running back from Boynton Beach, Florida. How a running back from Boynton Beach, Florida ends up in Hawaii, I will never know. But, you know, he actually had a pretty tough game against UMass. He only had 23 carries, 78 yards for 3.4 yards per carry, no touchdowns. Now, when Western Carolina came to calling, he said, you know what? I ain't scared of no catamounts from Kulawi. 25 carries, 202 yards, which averages 8.1 and a touchdown. You know, if Hawaii is going to be a team that really tries to challenge for the Mountain West this year, it's going to be on the backs and legs of Mr. Diasemi St. Juste.
I have high hopes for him. I actually saw him. I was trying to pick him, but I actually went back to my fallback guy, Demetrius Flanagan Foles, the junior safety for Arizona. I didn't have a lot of positive things to say about Arizona in our preseason talk, but he put up 8 total tackles, 6 of those were solo, and he got 2 interceptions in his opening game. Granted, it was against Northern Arizona, but I'm looking forward against their next matchup in Houston. He's going to really need to come out and perform similar to that if Arizona's going to stay on top. So I'm looking forward to seeing him in the future. Tommy has already left for the kitchen, so Artem, I will turn over to you. Who is your guy?
I just had to change up my guy last minute, but you guys are going to like this one. I picked senior linebacker from Michigan, Noah Burbush. One game, 1 solo tackle, 1 assisted tackle, 1 fumble recovery in the end zone. Nice. Look forward to following the Burbush in the games ahead. See how many other fumble recoveries he has.
I mean, with luck like that, I mean, how can he not be playing? All right, well, that's all we're going to have for the rest of the day. Thank you, as always, for listening. Tune in. Look out for our week 2 picks. And as always, if you have anything you'd like us to talk about, send us an email at toemeatleather@gmail.com. Till next time, have a good rest of your night. Bye-bye.